This week, the precious metals bull took a much-needed break following a 9-week stampede, but the Dow Jones Industrials continued its near-vertical trajectory, adding almost 200 points. Well, welcome everyone. Just great to rejoin you, your host Chris Walczyk, with another big show. Last week, the discussion included John Ng's forecast for $2,200 an ounce gold. Our guest this week is just as bullish on gold. Top gold trader in London, Andrew McGuire, returns with good news for gold bulls. He says the paper market is broken and the physical is finally reasserting its dominance. He sees a minimum of $1,400 gold as a fair value, given the 92-1 paper-to-bullion dilution. Within 3 to 6 months, an epic short-covering squeeze could unfold, culminating with 2,000 plus gold. Then John Embry, chief investment strategist at Sprott Asset Management, returns with an encore interview, and he outlines the case for gold and silver producers, just why he likes precious metal stocks. And remember, we'd like to answer your questions and comments. You can call into our toll-free hotline, 641-715-3900, and the mailbox number 514049. And then Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest must-hear report. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Well, after 9 weeks of perfect weather, partly cloudy skies appeared over the precious metals following comments from Fed officials of a stealth rate hike this month. Gold finished off 32 points, about 2.5%, finishing at $1,226, while silver fell just 67 cents off 3.6%, ending at $1,774. The precious metals XAU shares finished off 6.5 points, ending at 82, while black gold ended off 66 cents, 1.2% at 53.33. The chart of crude remains bullish. However, the CRB commodities index is now finally rolling over. And lastly, Bitcoin ETF GBTC continues to set higher highs and higher lows, up 10 points this week, 8.5% at $129 per share. Well, the top story moving the markets was surprisingly hawkish comments from Fed officials. The U.S. Federal Reserve Chairwoman Janet Yellen noted that an interest rate increase was likely to be announced this month. The Fed funds futures contracts were jolted by the comments. Just last week, it appeared that there would be no further rate hike until at least summer. But now the March 14th and 15th meeting is the most likely rate hike period. In addition, Fed Vice Chairman Stanley Fischer supported the stance, along with Fed Chief William Dudley and San Francisco Fed President John Williams. Precious metals, bottom line. Well, the technical outlook changed notably this week with the XAU correction. However, silver is holding firm at support, and the U.S. dollar, although it has attempted to rally for 3 consecutive weeks, has failed at each attempt, and this suggests that the rate hikes may already be somewhat factored into the markets. I continue to see a corrective wave in the sector for the time being, likely setting up for buying opportunities. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, visibility virtually unlimited over the New York Stock Exchange. Investors picked up U.S. equities at discounted prices following news of robust employment numbers. By Friday's close, the Dow Industrials added another 183 points, up 1%, finishing at 21,005. The S&P 500 added 16 points, finishing at 2,363, while the NASDAQ picked up 25, closing at 5,870. The U.S. Department of Labor noted initial jobless claims declined by 19,000 to 223,000. That's the best reading since 1973, according to one source. Driving the economic engine at full speed, service jobs remain responsible for the bulk of positions, continuing to add new employees at the fastest clip in a year and a half. In fact, one source notes that nearly 80% of Americans work in the service sector. Plus, the Institute of Supply Management said its non-manufacturing index climbed to almost 58% last month. Numbers over 50% tend to coincide with solid economic output. Well, the ISM production index for the service portion of our economy leaped 3.3 points, 64%, marking the highest rate since 2011 and one of the best in over a decade. Bottom line on equities, although the fear and greed index still is showing no signs of frothiness, the Dow did finally start to display some signs of waning momentum. While the prospect of a Dow 22,000 is still technically plausible, the surprise rate hike by the FOMC later this month might lower some of the bullish euphoria. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio. We'd like for you to stay with us. John Embry, precious metals industry professional for over 30 years, senior advisor at Sprott Asset Management, a favorite of our Gold Seek network. Welcome back, John Embry.
Well, it's nice to be back, Chris. Pleasure to chat with you.
Always a pleasure to have you here. You were expressing some discontent and disappointment, obviously. You know, we've seen a lot of volatility in our favorite sector, and you know, we've had colleagues on here of yours and others who have said that maybe there was some big manipulation. For instance, Rob Kirby noted that there was something like 8,000 tons of gold dumped on this market. That's 16 million pounds or 256 million ounces. Paper following the presidential election, and it looks like a huge manipulation scheme.
Well, I know Rob well, and I have a high regard for his thought process, and I think he's dead right. I mean, basically, they got, I think what I refer to as the deep state, the people behind the curtain, got wrong-footed to some extent with Trump's election, and they moved heaven and earth to make sure that nothing got disrupted. You know, everybody thought that were Trump to be elected, it would be like Brexit. The gold price would go bonkers on the upside, which it did briefly in the middle of the night. And that's when they unleashed this massive selling attack, which started a downward trend. And what's happened subsequently on COMEX, I mean, there's been a massive wipeout of the open interest. I think from the peak, it was something like 668,000 contracts. As of yesterday, it's just down to over 400,000. That's sort of 26 million ounces of paper gold wiped out on COMEX. That's all part and parcel of this process. I think it's prelude to a major move up. I think the boys know this, and they're sort of cleaning the decks and getting rid of their short positions and what have you. So am I discouraged? No. Am I irritated? Yes.
Do you have any comments on the U.S. dollar strength? I mean, obviously that at least has coincided with these strategies and schemes they've put into place. Is that just an effect of their manipulations?
That's an excellent question, Chris. Like, I think that, you know, Trump's election isn't necessarily good for the rest of the world. Like, I mean, if he follows up in some of his policies. And I don't know that you could say the U.S. dollar is strong. I would prefer to say that the other currencies are weak. As my friend and partner Eric Sprott said years ago, and I love the expression, he said, you know, trying to pick the best currency in the world is trying to pick the best-looking horse in the glue factory.
As you say, there was a lot of reallocation of institutions, big players, hedge funds, deep pockets. Folks were caught off guard to some extent, maybe some anticipation of a Brexit-like event, though, too, having seen that 6 to 8 months ago earlier. Once this euphoria and or dissatisfaction wears off, what's the next piece to move on the chessboard here?
Irrespective of who is the president of the United States, it's going to be difficult, if not impossible, to get a growth scenario in the economy for the very simple reason that I'm a big believer in Austrian economics. When you have infinitely too much debt in a system, you cannot grow sustainably. On that premise, if Trump follows up in his plans to cut taxes and undertake massive infrastructure spending, this, that, and the other thing, I think budget deficits will blow out. And we'll be sort of on the early stages on the trip to hyperinflation. But right now, everybody's euphoric. Things are going to be terrific, but they aren't going to be terrific. And it's just going to be a matter of how long it's going to take to, before people figure that out.
Unfortunately, I think the word was used too often. I'm probably guilty by association. The hyperinflation term was overused starting with 2006, and I think it turns people off. They've read about it in the blogosphere too much. But unfortunately, this time when the boy cries, I mean, there really will be a pack of wolves. And, you know, we've had John Williams from Shadow Stats last week, Peter Schiff, they're both in your camp. They completely back up and corroborate everything you say that hyperinflation hyperinflation could be an understatement. And then we see what's happening just south of our border in Venezuela. Shopkeepers don't even look at bills anymore. They just weigh them by the bag load for a few basic necessities. Most necessities are gone. You can't find toiletries. People forget this was the shining star of South America. I mean, this was the, you might say, the America of South America. And in just the blink of an eye, things are out of control. One message today noted that Trump is considering a gold standard advocate as Treasury Secretary. Might be a bit too much to hope that we would have some type of gold standard in just the next few years.
Didn't he just appoint Mnuchin, the guy from Goldman Sachs? We're dealing with such incredible uncertainty here because we've got a guy in there who is not a politician. And, you know, you really don't know what's going to happen in the near term.
No, it's well said, and I think that's the appeal. It's interesting because 8 years ago when President Obama came to power, it was the internet, I felt, that catapulted him into the presidency, and we've seen that again with Trump. I mean, if you looked at Trump's numbers online, the polls showed him they were abysmal, but when you looked at the number of folks reading his information, it was something like 20 times the opposition. So I really feel that this was a groundswell similar to Brexit. We're certainly hoping that there will be that big change. But I'm afraid that people might be disappointed yet again, because how much can one person really do?
I mean, the problems are so deep-seated. People are inherently optimistic. They want to believe in something better. And I mean, what Trump does represent is change. He is not the old guard's, you know, politician. So this is, and then the honeymoon phase is looked upon positively. And I'd like to be positive, too. Unfortunately, all the kind of work I do suggests that things are going to get worse rather than better.
And certainly there is the opportunity here to hopefully make we the people a more important moniker than we the cronies. For the most part, there's been a mindset that has been detrimental to society. Where I think many folks just have turned off the television. We haven't had a TV running in our house for almost 15 years.
I'm a sports fan, so I have my TV, but it's only on sports.
No, we were tickled to see the Chicago Cubs finally win the World Series. That's something. But, you know, I wanted to move on here to the situation with Prime Minister Modi in India, you know, wiping out the 501,000 rupee notes, you know, their largest. And then he announced that he wants to eliminate all cash and go to a cashless society. This in a society where 89% of daily transactions take place using some paper. That would seem to be a big plus for the precious metals, because people are once again nervous and put off by this type of, as you say, uncertainty.
This attack on cash, and it's not only in India, it's in Australia, and it's sort of building momentum globally. I'm totally opposed to it. I mean, it's just more state control because they can monitor every single thing you do. So, yeah, I think on that premise alone, like, if you can't own cash and you've got to have everything sort of in paper in the system, I would heavily endorse gold out of the system. Don't have it. You make sure you know where it is and it's in a safe place. But, yeah, I think that's a tremendous positive. And I would make one other comment, and that is that I believe India is under the complete influence of the United States. So I think this is sort of a trial run for this cashless society stuff. Head of the Bank of India, who resigned not that long ago, was U.S. trained, and he was clearly in there at the U.S.'s behest.
A puppet, Treasury Secretary, or monetary official, that, again, is just worth taking note. I was unaware of that. And, you know, as we wrap up here today, just wanted to throw in a recent comment from John Hathaway, of course, the head of...
I've been following Hathaway's work. I know him quite well, and he's been one of the guys all along, Chris, that's been really spot on in his analysis of gold.
He just penned an article saying that the U.S. presidential election involved the dumping of 2 years' production of gold.
The people who are being taken advantage of, who are those that think these are real markets today with all the new financial innovation. I mean, between derivatives, high-frequency trading, algorithms, et cetera, it's very easy to do.
I think you're right. And the key word there was derivatives, because it just gives them such amazing leverage. And these products get more and more fancy. I mean, there's so many bells and whistles, and the opportunity to do this, I think, without transparency is the word I'm looking for that makes it so detrimental to society. All right. Well, as we wrap up, any topicality we've missed today?
I love the United States. I spent a lot of time there. You know, I think the people that have supported Trump, he's going to be disappointed over the next several years because you're not going to be able to get the economic lift and the improvement of their living standards that they're hopeful for. And I'm worried about how they will respond to that.
What I hope is people are level-headed and recognize how much can we expect one person to accomplish in 4 years after 40 years.
Chris, I mean, it all started when they took the U.S. dollar off, removed the gold backing. That began the slippery slide to a debt crisis that is going to be ginormous.
Well, see, that's approaching 50 years, you know, with Nixon and the gold window. I think that was 71 or 70.
45 years plus now, you're right.
We all remember what happened during that decade to gold. Do you see another moment like that in the future?
Man, I'm on record as saying this, in my opinion, when you look at the price of gold and silver in relation to the amount of debt and currency, et cetera, in the world, I'm not sure they've ever been cheaper than they are as we speak at this moment. I think the guys that know what's going on, the boys behind the scene, the bullion bankers, the central bankers, that's one of the reasons why they're having this vicious takedown of gold, because they're reversing their positions. They're getting the longs out, and they're covering their shorts.
Please tell people more about Sprott Asset Management and any other contact information you'd like to leave.
As a money manager, we're great proponents of gold, and you can go to our website, www.sprott.com, and there's quite a wide variety of information. I would encourage people to look at it.
Always appreciate your thoughts, and hopefully you'll have more for us in 2017, as I suspect this is going to be a very interesting year yet again for the precious metals.
Well, I quite frankly, 2016 worked out a lot better for the bulls than I would have thought, so we'll see how 2017 goes.
Almost all of the rallies of the last 5 years fizzled out, but not 2016. We've had some selling, but we're still up for the year.
Oh, it's remarkable. Like, I mean, I was a long-term stock jockey, and I've never, you know, this is one of the most expensive markets I've ever seen, particularly when you factor in the deteriorating fundamentals like profits and economic activity, etc.
John Embry, we always appreciate your thoughts, sir.
It's always nice to talk to you, Chris, anytime.
Andrew McGuire, independent London metals trader and analyst with an uncanny knack for reading the precious metals market. And this is going to be a big treat for our precious metals aficionados today. Approaching 50 years of experience. Welcome back to the show here, Mr. McGuire.
Great to be with you. And gosh, you know what, Chris? It amazed me. I look back, it was May 2015 when we spoke last. I cannot believe how long that's been.
As we were saying before the show, I mean, the topicality has piled up. So before I get into my bevy of questions here, would you like to give us a bullet-by-bullet overview?
I think what we talked about, and I think just listen to a couple of highlights of what we talked about just so that we could pick up the thread. And sure enough, we talked about the implications of 100-to-1 fractional ownership of gold. We talked about this is, I think, the most important thing. 2 years ago, we discussed the outflow of liquidity from the paper markets into the physical markets. And since then, we've come now to the point, finally, where the paper markets, and I'm saying this from a wholesale market perspective, that we see that the paper markets are clearly broken, and we've seen an enormous abyss appear between the paper and the gold markets. And think about a week ago, and I made something quite public, because I really actually believe we've reached the point where there's probably a reset in the making. And the reason I say this is that here we are, I looked at the chart in May 2015. Where were we? About $1,200, Chris. Then we went all the way up to, where did we go all the way up to? We went all the way up to 1377, and then all the way back down to December, 1045-ish, absolutely. That was the point where we saw the first part of the abyss open. And then sure enough, We come back up, and where do we come back down again? But this time, about $100 short of where everybody was projecting. Everyone said at the time, and I'm sure everybody and their brother was out there saying, all the mainstream was saying, no, this is going down to at least test December 2015 lows. And they were, of course, as you say, 1045, 1050. Well, we bounced at around. But the key thing here, Chris, is this time around, not unlike 2015, this time around, liquidity had flowed out of the paper markets into the physical markets, where we had some size buyers, and I'm talking about central bank sovereign size bids sitting at that level around about 11:30. Sure enough, bounce there. And I think what we're saying is we've still got 100-to-1 leverage, or I mean, Reserve Bank of India came out, I think in 2010, said 92-to-1, but in round numbers, 100-to-1 leverage. When people put out targets, and we had Goldman coming out, I think Jeff Curry from Goldman coming out saying, yeah, let's even look at $1,000 gold. And then we bounce at 11:30. They have bets on, and the options market, we track the options markets too. We look at the footprints as traders and as wholesalers. More importantly, it's where those footprints cross between the wholesale market and the technical market. And these guys were betting on literally a breach of 1040. And what happened is when we bounced at 11:30, it locked out short cover. And I'm talking about short cover, not just from bullion banks who were aggressively looking to take gold down to those levels, but also by the what we call the officials. And bear in mind that there are 6 bullion banks that have bank accounts with the gold bank accounts with the Bank of England. And I think it's important because so many people, and Chris, how many times have we heard out there that, well, it's impossible. It's just not possible to have that kind of aggressive involvement by central planners in the physical markets, in the gold markets. It's just not possible. Much like if you remember when we talked about, at the time we talked about, there was Deutsche Bank hadn't admitted liability, UBS hadn't, Barclays hadn't. I mean, you know, we were talking about manipulation, we were talking about my evidence, etc. But since we spoke, we saw these admissions, recent admissions coming in where traders, and we've seen, everyone's seen the chat logs of, you know, let's slam it now, let's do it. You know, all these things are now in the open. So all the trolls that are out there saying, well, it's impossible. You know, these guys are conspiracy theorists. They're making this stuff up. Of course, it's not possible. But when I mentioned the word central planner, I think this is one level where people say, well, okay, all right, so we've got evidence that these bullion banks are manipulating price and they've admitted to doing it. But where they stop short and where everyone stops short is to say, well, yeah, but, you know, certainly no central planners involved in this. So I just need to, and I know that I've mentioned this because I want to draw everyone's attention to the fact that, and I used the word abyss just now, but I want to talk about, just very briefly if I can, about why it's absolutely evident, and it's apart from the great evidence that Chris Powell and Gatter have provided and Bill Murphy, etc. This is a piece of evidence where everyone can look at this and say, okay, all right, yeah, officials, central planners are definitely involved in the gold market, and furthermore, that they wish to depress the price. So irrefutable evidence came in when we saw the most prominent default occur in 1999. It was a default of Goldman Sachs when they spun out of control after being hung with an auditable recorded 100-to-1 naked short gold position that long-term capital management had accrued before they failed. Now, they were holding the bag on that. Now, to avert a too-big-to-fail daisy chain bullion bank default, in an emergency move, Goldman Sachs was bailed out by the Bank of England with four, if you remember, it was 400 tons of physical gold sale. And everyone refers to that as Brown's Bottom. But here's the evidence. You know, this is for the people that doubt that yes, there may be a few rogue traders. No, I wish to actually make this, Google this, go through it, do what you want to. But basically, you just Google Eddie George. He worked for the Bank of England. He bailed out Goldman Sachs in 1999. He was the governor of the Bank of England at that time. And facing this Goldman Sachs bankruptcy, he admitted the following words. And I just want to read these very few words, Chris, because this is what people should Google. And he says, quote, "We looked into the abyss. If the gold price rose any further, a further rise would have taken down one or several trading houses, which might have taken down all the rest in their wake. Therefore, at any price, at any cost, the central banks had to quell the gold price, manage it. It was very difficult to get the gold price under control, but we have now succeeded." Now, he also added, "The US Fed was very active in getting the gold price down, so was the UK." So that's really just, you remember, Eddie George was seconded by the BIS, the Bank of International Settlements. He worked for the IMF. He retired and worked at NM Rothschild. So no one was closer to the inner workings of the loco London gold market. So, but I think what is interesting about all of this, we talk about 100 to 1. We talk about the paper market getting broken. Basically, what we're saying is, here we are again. And we're here in 2017, and what have we got? 100 to 1 short, a physical market that is the physical market dog, as I refer to it, starting to wag the paper market tail. And if you remember when you and I spoke before, it was the complete inverse. We had everyone thought the COMEX was the price-setting market, which it has been until the lines have just crossed. And basically, so here we are again. We're approaching, now if commercials, and that's the bullion banks that have bank accounts at the Bank of England, and if they cannot get the price back down, there are naked short element to because they bet on a lower price. We're back 100 to 1, so we know that that's a highly leveraged position. We look at the OCC report, the Office of the Comptroller report, and we see billions of dollars worth of bets out there. So really, the conduit that was set up in July 2011, where Dodd-Frank blocked U.S. citizens from trading FX gold, that's foreign exchange gold, in the over-the-counter LBMA markets, was put in place because they knew there was going to be a point where the paper market diverged from the physical market, and they would be unable and locked out of short cover. And bearing in mind, there are a lot of leveraged position. And bearing in mind that not long after this move in 2011, and you look at the footprints, not long after, the CME brought in fresh halt trade rules that can freeze COMEX open interest for 5 solid minutes. In a picosecond world, a 5-minute halt in the COMEX market is inconceivable to imagine. Now, And the options market, a three-minute halt. Now, while the over-the-counter market, though, which is the bullion banks and non-U.S. citizens cannot trade the over-the-counter markets, but all the bullion banks that have accounts with the COMEX and, of course, who have much larger positions in the over-the-counter market in the U.K., they can take long positions in the spot market while the COMEX is frozen. And that ensures that any black swan event that could spike gold higher during a live session, it provides them a backdoor to these LBMA bullion banks operating on the COMEX to offset or indeed actually profit enormously by going long in the over-the-counter markets while the hot money and US traders are hung out to dry. So essentially, what we're saying is the physical market's now taking control of starting to take control of the paper markets, starting to dictate where you can short this thing to. And by the way, bring it to us and we will buy it, because there are so many situations now. We have a huge uncertainty, and I'm speaking from a wholesale market perspective, and I think I bring an unusual view to people because they look at traders, they look at 10 trend lines, they look at pivots, they look at all the technicals, oversold, overbought, whatever that might be. But you forget There is a physical market that is underpinning all of this. And when the sovereign and central bank guys start to aggregate bid levels, which they are not prepared to go below, and they are looking to accumulate, then literally that locks out short cover. And each stair step higher, and when they realize they're not getting filled, because bear in mind, these same bullion banks are fully aware, and central planners are fully aware where these big bidders are. There is no 400 tons of UK gold or any above ground supply of physical gold to smash the market down. So they're relying on the paper markets. And yet each time the paper market brings price to them, there's a certain thing called exchange for physical. So if the COMEX price goes too low, what you can do is you can buy spot in the UK. You can buy that position, convert it to a spot position, and take delivery. So essentially, we've got an unusual situation. I see the lines as crossed. If the physical market wasn't this strong, and I am now speaking from a wholesale perspective, and we can see that these bidders are there and these buyers are there, then there is no back door other than to ultimately see these two big-to-fail banks bailed out again, and this time with no physical, Chris. It's got to be a cash settlement. So that's why I'm warning everyone, at some point over the next 90, maybe it'll be 6 months, but I'm really looking at the footprints right here, and even the fact that the over-the-counter options that expired today, bearing in mind COMEX options expired last Thursday, but the over-the-counter options, which are much, much larger and represent Bank of International Settlements and central planners' positioning, just expired this afternoon at 3 p.m., which is just 1 hour ago, in the money, because anything sub 1350 was seriously offside. So it was just closed, and unfortunately, on the wrong side of their positioning. So it really is telling me that where's the back door? If you don't have physical at this price, and nobody is going to sell physical at this price when they sense that the physical market is rising and all liquidity providers and liquidity takers know this, as do the central planners, as do the bullion banks who are connected to the physical market, and they're being forced to front run discounts. So really, interesting times. I say we're looking back at a historical perspective. All the way back 2 years ago when we spoke, we've reached such an interesting situation today.
This is the sea change moment, and I'd love to underscore, especially for our newer listeners, the implications of what you've laid out here so eloquently in the minutiae. Simplistic analogy or parallel to an enormous dam. We have the Oroville Dam, of course, in California. You know, what we have here with this gold and precious metals market is an enormous water reservoir. The Army Corps of Engineers are scrambling to reinforce the dam. But unfortunately, you've laid out that those reinforcements, i.e. Eddie George, 400 tons of physical gold, it's not available. We just don't have those resources here to stem the flow. And eventually, this edifice will implode.
Well, you use the dam analogy. I suppose, you know, it would be ludicrous trying to paper over that, wouldn't it? I mean, again, we're talking physical. This is a real physical event. And as I say, you know, we know that as Eddie George made it quite clear, any price at any cost, we had to get the price of gold down. What does that imply? It means that you're on the wrong side of the trade. You're backing up a bullion bank that's likely to default. And we're reaching a point where we're seeing those same bullion banks, too big to fail banks, at the point of breaking. Somebody's decided, and I'm talking about there's an aggregation of demand there, and we're talking competing central banks now. We see Russia, we see China, we see other central banks and sovereigns now saying, right, we're in a scary situation. The Fed has pretty much lost the plot. Let's face it. You know, you could put an interest rate hike here, an interest rate there. What does that do? That just changes nothing. In the real world, the physical price of gold is the only real currency. as it's always been, and it's the bedrock. It's the anchor point for all fiat currencies. And so it's not even rocket science to realize that owning physical is the only safe bet here. And if you're in the risk market, i.e. you're playing stocks, asset manager, and you're looking at being forced to compete with your neighbor, and you're looking to make returns, so you're chasing froth every day, you need some form of hedge. You need fire insurance. So even those guys, even what we call the hot money, the momentum guys, even they are saying, well, yeah, okay, we better take some exposure to gold. Well, as you know, Chris, it doesn't take much extra. We're trading at the margin here. You know, we're already talking 100 to 1. How much more leverage can you put? It's fine if no one is taking delivery and you can just defer it and keep shorting it and you'll rinse the paper market and you'll get back most of those positions. But over time, this is accrued. These short positions have accrued to a massive position. The duration mismatches, you know, I think we don't want to get too technical because a lot of people, I'm sure, don't want to get in the technicals. But we look at the co-basis. That's just one example here. A fair value. Let's just say various things, GOFO, co-basis, one thing or another. They tell us, you know, apart from what we're seeing, they tell us what a fair value is. And we, at no point all the way through, and I'm talking about backwardations, and I know James Turk and many of your good guests have talked really eloquently about backwardation. But we are looking at no point, it all the way from 1377 all the way down to 1130 this time around. At no point did the fair value, based upon real data and the forwards curve, et cetera, drop below 1300. So that's what influences us as wholesalers. That's what influences us to buy for our clients. Where is that fair value? And that fair value, Chris, is based on this 92 to 1 leverage price too. It's based upon how the spot price interacts with the futures price, interacts with the curve. But it's a leverage. We see 600 tons of gold cleared every day and only 5 tons to 7 tons delivered. So this is even based on accepting this data at face value. The fair value today is about $1,400. We're trading, as I look at the chart right now, 1257. And we got Trump and we got Yellen coming up. We're going to have volatility. But we're talking 1400. Well, that's why at every single PM fix this for the last 2 weeks, I've seen a sovereign buyer coming in. Well, just accumulating. We also have these stair steps, as I call them. It was 1130. Then it moved up to 1172. Then it moved up to 1204. Each and every time, these are sovereigns and central banks that are not getting filled and are having to chase price up. Why? Because they want. And they need to, first of all, you've got asset management companies that need to buy some hedges, albeit those be on the paper market. But we're also seeing these sovereigns and central banks who buy pure physical having to chase the price up, no longer being afforded the luxury of historically sitting back and saying, you know what, this paper market, it's a lovely rigged game. We'll just sit back, wait for it to come back to us and we'll buy it. No longer having that luxury. So this is an inflection point, a historical inflection point, and I think that's what's so exciting.
I know we have listeners out there who are thinking, don't the central bankers have carte blanche authority to print as much paper money as possible? You're noting this significant disconnect between the paper and the physical. We've all been waiting for that as the tipping point, if you will, in the chaotic system where there's no turning back. And it certainly seems we're on the cusp of something like that. I don't know if your fair value calculation is proprietary or not, but I'm sure our listeners are all ears.
It's not. It's not really. No, I think a lot of people track co-basis, the basis, which is basically the bid-ask spreads, et cetera. You know, obviously we get into a lot of technical detail. It's just not. We're not doing 101, education service here. But what we're doing is really just trying to keep to the point here. Fair value, as I said, in bottom line, is based upon the fractional reserve system as it is right now. Here's the issue, though, Chris. Real fair value, I have no idea what that price is. It is so much higher than this obviously diluted 92 to 1 price that we are still estimating $1,400 for gold right now, based upon a 1250 price. So again, this is what influences central banks and sovereigns to buy. But the real price? I mean, Chris, I can't even, I've been around a long time. I can't even imagine what the real price is. Because if you take away that, you can't say, well, it's 92 times that. It's not possible to do that, because there are some element of there's some legitimate hedging in there. There's some positions. It's not to that necessary to that full degree. However, we're talking probably well in excess of the 2011 highs. And that's a no-brainer. And I hate speculating. Some people go as high as say, well, if you divide all the debt, etc., it's got to be 50 grand an ounce. Well, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is it has got to be higher than it is today by several hundred dollars, because simply you eliminate that. You start to actually divide all these true factors, the curves, into a real price, which we are starting to see and which we will continue to see. And especially, you know, I speak now, I put on my allocated bullion exchange hat, and that's a physical exchange, a pure physical exchange, institutional physical exchange. And, you know, as this leverage starts to unwind, because more and more people are trading on the physical platforms, then literally, we're going to see what that price is. But as I say, Chris, it is a lot higher than today.
At least here in the United States, we have almost lockstep inverse relationship with the greenback. And of course, gold and precious metals, in particular, the yellow metal. Do you have any reservations on your forecasts should the dollar reestablish itself?
Do you know what? Yes. I mean, that we could see a stronger dollar. But I also know that we can see stronger gold with a stronger dollar. Now, we've seen that in the past, but it's simply, again, this is the thing. It's starting to actually lose this US-centric COMEX view, pricing view of gold. We're so far under fair value, there's some catch-up to be done. So, yes, we could have a stronger dollar. And, yes, we've seen this sort of inverse relationship. But When we see people running to the dollar, often it's because of a black swan event or something, because simply you hate the dollar, but you need it. You know, you've got to run to it. It's a safe haven. Well, so is gold. And quite often we see gold and the dollar rising as a safe haven together. And I think we're seeing more and more of that. But more importantly, I think we're seeing a dislocation of so many correlations now, taking off the COMEX blinkers and starting to look at the real physical market. There's going to come a point not too far from now when the COMEX is no longer going to be dictating the price. And as I say, the actual point where the COMEX has its weakness is that when you discount the COMEX, which is a non-delivery market, we know, and you say, well, okay, we'll just generate as much volume, as much fresh open interest, naked short open interest. We got billions, we got trillions to throw at it. Let's just create an unlimited amount of, that's worst case scenario. This is what people's fears are. Unlimited amount of open interest, i.e. positions. Let's just short, and let's get this, swamp the price, dilute it to the point where, well, we're all back on side again. Trouble with that is, as we've just mentioned, there's a thing called an exchange for physical. So a COMEX price, where then backwashes into the spot price in London, which is actually deliverable. And it's deliverable not just in London, where we see 5 to 7 tons of physical delivered a day, but the Shanghai Gold Exchange and other physical exchanges. And this is where, that's why we, for the very first time, the Allocated Bullion Exchange, which is the first institutional grade exchange, whether you are the Bank of China, whether you are a producer, or whether you're Grandma Grimble in Ontario, you can trade, you can buy, you can vault, you can, every single trade that you conduct on that exchange is pure physical, vaulted physical outside the system. But the key thing is, Chris, in institutional ties. Now, we've got plenty of great alternatives out there, and I encourage people, if you're a retail guy, go out and buy your coins, stack them. You go to the Sprotts of this world. You go to, you know, there's so many options out there where you can go and buy James Turk. You know, you can buy physical as a retail buyer. The key thing is the institutionals have been forced to trade and as producers included, being forced to trade in the incumbent system, which is the LBMA system, which is controlled by just a few tiny cartel of banks. And that's where the problem has laid. So now we've got a breaking of a disruption of that entire service. And the key thing is that it is on an institutional level. And you can trade, if you're the Bank of China and you are trading kilo bars, you are going to get front run by JP Morgan or other of these large banks, which has happened in the past, because it's a smaller market. They will know you're in the market and they'll front run you. Now, when you trade at an institutional level in the same size, on the allocated bullion exchange platform, you have complete anonymity. No one knows whether it's Grandma Grimble or the Bank of China. Okay, there's a bunch of trades go on, but they can occur on multiple exchanges at simultaneously or at times of a 23-hour day and accumulate physical based upon the spot price as it's dictated to by the swamping of price on the COMEX. It then translates to a spot which is physically deliverable off London. And that is the point. This is why I'm so excited. This is why I sit on the advisory board of the Allocated Bullion Exchange. This is why we are so excited, because although we've been trading now for a good year or so, we're about to hard launch, and this is going to change. Would anybody in their right mind trade a COMEX position, or would any second-tier bullion bank trade an unallocated fractional reserve position if the alternative is electronically to trade at exactly the same size, exactly the same speed, at no extra cost, and in a physically backed market where you have no counterparty risk? Of course you're going to trade it. You've got an alternative system that completely bypasses this old incumbent system, and it's not costing you anything other than switching to the platform. And obviously liquidity is the key here, and that's what we're after now. Now that we see the physical markets in liquidity out of the paper markets, it's time to close the loop.
This is really at the heart of so many of the issues. Many of our guests over the last 12 years now on the show, their concern has always been we cross that threshold. And you seem to think we have, or we're certainly on the cusp of crossing it, where people lose faith and confidence in the paper promises, in the ETFs, and the rest of it out there as well, because there are so many instruments that are backed by promises and say, wait a minute, we want the physical. We want something in our hands, something tangible that we can take away from this transaction, because everything else is encumbered by debt.
We're looking at everything from a wholesale perspective, and I think that if going to add value for your listeners, it's really rare that you get a real wholesale perspective that balances up against all the technical levels that people talk about the non-delivery COMEX market, and you know, the basically the paper dog wagging the physical tail. Now it's inverse, and I think bound to be a reset of some sort without the physical to actually bail out these banks who are, as I said, teetering on this abyss again with no Eddie George, no physical to bail them out. Look at this from a physical market perspective, and I go, well, who are they going to be the beneficiaries of this COMEX default? It's going to be the physical exchanges. Now, here's the problem. The COMEX, the CME, all have skin in the game. The insiders that trade on these exchanges have skin in the game. They have a directional focus. The over-the-counter markets, because of the 92 to leverage, because we've seen the Eddie George comments, nothing's changed. Everyone, central planners have skin in the game. When you can move an institutional size to an electronic physical platform that has no skin in the game, is completely agnostic to the price, simply transacts a producer sale who can sell on the offer rather than on the bid, and on the other side of that trade could be anyone from another sovereign to individuals who are buying that directly from the producer, cutting out the entire middleman. Well, obviously, this is, to me, this is the exciting thing, because we've got such a change in this is a historic change. It's much like, Chris, if you remember, God, was it the, I can't remember now, it's the 90s, early 90s, I think it was, when if you wanted to trade foreign exchange, you had to pick up the phone, you'd phone a broker, You'd say, what's yen dollar doing? What's my bid? What's my ask? What's my spread? He would then get on the phone to two other dealers, and depending on what time of day it is, whether Japan was open or whatever, you'd get your price, high friction, big cost. Somebody came along, made the whole system electronic. Now we look at foreign exchange trading as a click of the mouse. This is what we're doing. This is the change that the ABX, or the Allocated Bullion Exchange, is bringing to the market. There's nothing institutional out there that is like that. So we're going to see that kind of a paradigm shift where gold can be traded physically with no leverage. And although you can use, and all there are facilities to margin your positions, there's no risk to that, because essentially, if you're going to margin those positions, you can use your positions much like it was COMEX, except it's a delivery market. So you're going to have, much like the SGE, where somebody, if you want to trade on the SGE, you want to trade physical, you first deposit your physical. Then you can trade. What a difference. In COMEX, you don't own a thing and you can sell it. Well, that's the difference. If you want to buy and sell things on a physical exchange, you first of all have to deposit that physical, and you cannot go beyond that. Now, if you're a client and you want to borrow against your existing positions to do some other things, no harm in that, because basically those positions are still as they are. No one's leveraging them. You're simply using some of the cash to do other things. But then you can literally, if the price goes up, price goes down, you can manage that position by putting cash back in or taking cash back out. But essentially, this replaces the entire COMEX system, which I know the reason I'm talking about it is because so many people ask me, you know, is there any alternative? If there's a reset, what happens to my positions? Do I get cash settled? I mean, do I just get cash settled on the day before and then the price jumps up $100, $200, $300, $400 the next day because everyone now realizes it's a scam? This is why I'm so excited about this huge change that's coming to the market.
You tossed an interesting tidbit into the discussion, and that, of course, under the moniker reset. Are we talking here a force majeure moment, as you seem to be alluding to, or is there something else that you're anticipating?
We saw the CME bringing in all these rules in, locking out U.S. citizens from trading while the busier $5 trillion a day foreign exchange markets go on. Obviously, over-the-counter gold just trades as part of a $5 trillion a day foreign exchange market, which includes all the other crosses, dollar, yen, et cetera, et cetera. So that cannot close down. So essentially what's going to happen is you'd have a market halt. That's, for example, this is how it would, the reset to me would happen. What's that going to do? There's going to be nobody wanting to sell at this point. You're going to have everyone wanting to buy or cover short positions. When that market opens back up again, okay, you've got a three-minute delay in options. But let's just say you now come, the market's just reopened. It's immediately going to go, it's going to get halted again. And it's going to get halted again because there's going to be such a bottleneck of positions. It's obviously going to create a problem. So I can see that what's going to happen is we're going to reach a Friday night, Chris. This is the only way. It will be no drama. It will be non-default, because bearing in mind that all these positions, that the over-the-counter positions, unallocated positions, are cash settleable anyway, it won't be considered a default. What they'll do is simply say, right, here's the price on Friday. It was $12.50. So here you are. Here's all your cash back. No default. You've got your money back. Okay. What about the pension fund that invested 10 million ounces in 1993? They thought they were hedging positions. They thought they had a parachute. They just got settled. The price of gold just jumped up to God knows what level. Obviously, you get any kind of a settlement like that, you don't think the sharks are going to be in the water? Of course they will. You're going to see an IG9 sort of situation. You're going to see, where will the price be? Who will be selling at that? Who's going to sell at this point? You're going to find a point where someone is willing to sell at that point with an over-the-counter price, a foreign exchange price of gold, that is going to open up at, just say, $500 higher. That's locked out all the people that thought they had a hedge, all the people that thought they were invested in gold, inverted commas, are going to be left on the side. Yes, they won't lose any money, but they will have lost the very, very instrument that they were seeking to protect themselves with.
You've really established two levels here, two thresholds. fair value given the concept that most folks have in their minds. And then you seem to have a fair value that's much, much, much higher. Without speculating too much, any thoughts?
Well, as I say, Chris, it's the kind of thing that I just hate to speculate. I'm basing this upon real footprints, real wholesale demand, real looking at the curve as it's based upon a 92-to-1 leveraged ratio. And I'm looking and saying, well, it has to be higher than the 2011 high. So it has to be more than $2,000. I suspect there won't be at $2,000. You may get some people saying, well, you know what, fair enough, I've just made a good profit. You're going to get some speculators who are saying, well, I'll unload some positions here. But we're talking physical. Now, the real physical buyers, Chris, are those people, the central banks, the sovereigns, all the bullion that's flowed out of London into the Eastern exchanges. These are physical buyers. They are not sellers. That, at no point do I think any of those gold positions come up for sale again. So really, what point do I think there's going to be very little coming to market until we really see where things settled out. And I think over 2,000 is my answer.
And any takeaway points for our listeners today as the discussion comes to a close?
I would say, please get yourself into physical. Be very, very careful in leveraging yourself. And if you're short on the COMEX, watch out, because if there is a cash settlement, you are going to be locked out. You could be locked out and have unlimited losses. I think it's the physical holders, and I'm talking about the over-the-counter market here as well. If you're a physical holder, then you're insulated from any price rise. You are going to enjoy any price rise. You'll be left on the sidelines. But if you're short, beware, because Lord knows what's going to happen to your positions.
Very good, Andrew McGuire. Please tell us more about Gold Star Global Services and anything else you'd like to cover today.
You know, obviously, I think my real focus now is to help people to get into the physical market. And I think, you know, obviously we have a trading service, which is AndrewMcGuireGoldTrading.com. And I have a lot of clients, the institutional, but some of the largest institutionals that come with us to also upload a video every morning which is basically a lesser service, which I offer for mostly my institutionals who can make their own decisions. We put support resistance levels today, what's going to happen, you know, we track the algos, and we also where those algos confluence with the physical support levels, which gives us sure buys at things, places like 1130, as we talked, 1172, et cetera, the 1204. These are certainties that we bid there. We're going to be insulated. Because why? Because the sovereigns and central banks are there behind us. We're just aggregating our positions along with theirs. We're not smart. We're just following them. And then as far as the Gold Star Global service is concerned, I look after a lot of physical clients' positions who can open up an account with Gold Star, track their own physical. They can have an allocated bullion exchange account. They can look at the prices and choose to buy and sell in any of the exchanges, whether it's Singapore, Hong Kong, Dubai, and buy, vault, sell, whatever they want to do, pure physical, and be insulated outside the system. So that's really my focus now, is to help people. And I actually offer to trade their accounts for them as well. I don't charge an extra fee for that. I just really, it's my job is now to get as many people into physical before this reset occurs.
Andrew McGuire, thanks so much, and talk soon.
Thanks, Chris. I really enjoyed being with you.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity. Brazil Resources, based in the 8th largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves. Industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment venture. Bank and founding director. Their Sal George project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Rhea project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. Over the course of my adult life, the areas where I have had occasional significant challenges, those situations where I ultimately suspended my judgment, my analysis, my risk assessment, for the alleged expertise of someone else because of their profession, or they came tagged with some other expertise, even though I had done my own work and reached a different conclusion. When I agreed to follow their line of reasoning, in retrospect, there was a part of me that just knew, in the moment, the course of action that was being followed would likely end in failure. And so it was. Over the course of my adult life, I've learned to listen to that little voice inside myself with more frequency. And as a result, it has rewarded me with greater clarity. One area that just doesn't pass the smell test is real estate. There are a number of markets I monitor closely around the country using Zillow.com. Zillow is great because it will send you automatic updates on the market condition of specific properties and search areas you are interested in. What is particularly interesting, and something I have noted in passing before, is that since mid-2015, real estate prices in certain markets have increased by 20% to as much as 40% in some markets. Ignore whatever happy talk you may hear about real estate, where chances are you may hear very little discussion at all, at least not the overt, in-your-face mania we heard in 2006, 2007, and 2008. But we are hearing national loan companies on the conservative radio talk shows throughout the day peddling their cash extraction strategies that, quote, might be right for you, as scenarios you should once again be considering. If your gut isn't telling you something is terribly wrong with this deja vu, then your short-term recollection to the financial trauma of 2008 and 2009 has been compartmentalized or repressed. Because yes, it can happen again. If you watch all those homes sneaking onto the market right now, hoping to cash in on the artificially high inflation that has crept into home prices the past 2 years, your gut may be telling you that the first thing that could disappear in a market disruption is that 20 to 40% increase that has occurred over the past 2 years in some of these markets. And from there, all bets are off. Fake news may be the enemy of the state, but the enemy of the people is debt. Don't forget that for a minute. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week. The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice. GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.